The rippling waters of a bay, overlooking at a city skyline. Night falls. The lights and skyscrapers twinkle. Miramax Films. A fire engine enveloped in flames becomes the logo for Film 4. Black and white letters on a red rectangle. Crossed fingers. In block letters, UK Film Council. Awarding funds from the National Lottery. Film 4, UK Film Council and Miramax Films present. A free-range film. The foamy white waves of a murky brown sea roll onto a litter-strewn shingle beach and crash against a sea break stretching out into the water. On a wall, an oil painting of a similar scene with a figure in the sea. Staring at the painting, an elderly man with grey floppy hair drinks from a mug. Inside the cabin cafe.
Shall we?
We shall.
Two old men tip pills on a table.
Good. Now what have I got today? No. You should try these. You'll never wake up.
It's the waking up pills I'm looking for.
Anything blue, I recommend for that.
White ones give me more of a thrill.
Both men munch down several pills.
There we are. Do not operate heavy machinery. Keep away from children.
Biblical advice.
Very good, gentlemen.
Excellent, my dear.
They're served food.
Have we got my glasses?
No, you've got them.
Why would I have them? I'm not wearing them, am I? Christ, I've lost them now. That's the worst thing that's ever happened.
They're in your right hand.
No.
You wouldn't last 5 minutes without me.
No, I'm getting help.
Professional.
My niece's girl.
Have you worked out what the girl will actually do?
She'll shop and cook for me.
A sort of nurse, then?
No uniform. Don't give yourself a coronary. At the hospital, they said, if I'm clear in 5 years, I'm safe. I said, by then, I'll be drinking with Jesus.
He's looking forward to meeting you. He loved your Polonius, but he found your Caesar a little weak.
Weak?
A little...
what?
Fruity.
No, he fucking didn't. Did he? Fruity? What the fuck? Fruity? Fucking fruit!
In a flat.
I'm parched. How about a drink?
This isn't a pub. I've got to get her room ready.
Can I help?
In a bedroom.
Oh, no, don't flap it about like that, Morris. I'm getting wind rash.
I'll tuck it in. You'll tire yourself.
She'll suffocate in there.
There's no reason for her to move around unnecessarily at night.
Not unless she needs to attend to me.
In what way?
Well, I bought a little bell to put beside my bed. If I feel unwell, I could tinkle it. See?
I bet she can't wait to hear that little tinkle.
I bought her a pink towel, too, so there's no confusion in the bathroom.
Oh, no, you wouldn't want that.
Ian glares at Morris, then strides out carrying a spare pink towel.
And in case she wants something to read, I got her these.
Three books.
Fucking Edith Wharton.
I really want to educate the girl, Morris. Pass something on.
Yes, dear.
She loves music. While we're eating, I thought we could listen to the St. Matthew Passion.
Lovely.
No doubt it'll be tomato soup and a temazepam for you.
No doubt.
Shall I get her to run a nice bath and put my dressing gown on the radiator?
Ian ties on an apron.
Hope she can do a rocket salad or something interesting with fish.
Morris leans on a piano, an aquarium in a doctor's waiting room. In the surgery, the doctor lubricates his gloved forefinger.
Going anywhere nice for the... what is it?
First Lady Fawns.
Oh, where?
Piranha fish.
Oh, fantastic. Right, nice deep breath for me now. And there we go. Easy, but not necessarily nice. Uncomfortable? That's quite normal. Feel the same myself. Everything all right otherwise? Life treating him well?
Jesus Christ.
Good.
After the internal examination...
The prostate should feel like a peach, with a groove down the centre. Yours is a little bumpy. There might be a small nodule in there, but it could easily be nothing. So we need to send you to a specialist. A lot of older men have this problem. It rarely kills them.
They die of something else first.
Right. So you should worry a little, but not a lot.
Now, I'm sharing a tent with her. Not after last year. I made that quite clear.
Good on you.
And in the end, there was such a stream of, you know...
Really?
Yeah, coming and going and all that. I like standing outside and shouting, another warm body for my friend.
You should have done.
Yeah, I know. Excuse
fine.
Me.
All done. Can you put your finger
Hello.
On that, please?
How are we today?
Morris is with a practice nurse. Later in his dingy flat, he sits stooping, head bent. He raises his hand to his face.
Come on, old man.
He drags himself to his feet. Morris stands in front of hangers bearing shirts and a tie rack. He selects a dark tie to go with his pressed lavender shirt and fastens it. In front of a bathroom cabinet, he combs his luxuriant head of grey hair. At Ian's apartment block.
Thank Christ you're here.
What's that?
Oh, horrible, horrible, foul, vile, beyond belief.
The two old men shuffle in Ian's hallway.
Was the bath too cold or the towel too hot? Was the fish overcooked?
Fish. I'd have been lucky to get a fish finger inserted into my rectum.
God,
Morris.
What's gone wrong?
It's hardly been 24 hours. Ready, I'm screaming for euthanasia.
Ian cowers behind Morris as a teenage girl, her hair pulled back in a ponytail, saunters along the corridor, chomping into pot noodles. She looks at the two men, then goes into the kitchen, sits down and starts to remove her shoes.
Shouldn't you be getting ready?
For what?
The theatre.
Oh, God, yes. Yes, let's leave immediately. I just changed. Oh. Let's hope it's a long play.
Ian, with grey hair and moustache, moves away.
You've never said that before.
Morris takes a deep breath and closes his eyes momentarily. His tongue rests on his lower lip. He slowly turns his head to his left, then steps warily along the hall to the open kitchen door. The girl is sitting at a table, the pot noodles in her left hand, a fork in her right. She doesn't look up as he enters. He leans back against the door jamb, his hands in front of him, and watches her.
I'm Morris. Morris. You?
She keeps her head down.
Can I? You will find I usually call around this time for a little drinky. I like whiskey with a whisker of water. No more than a whisker, mind you. That ruins it. It's called drowning.
He pours himself some and stares at it.
Drowning. Do you know how to mix drinks? Once acquired, it's a talent that will serve you for life. Like typing.
She picks up an apple as he sips his drink. The girl lays the apple back in its glass bowl, rises and walks out. Morris follows her to the living room.
So, what are you doing? In London, I mean.
Looking for work.
What sort of work?
Work. You know, work.
Yes, yes, I know all about it. Any particular kind?
Modeling.
Well, there can't be much call for that.
Call for what?
Yodeling.
Not yodeling. Yodeling. Modeling. You know.
She gestures with her open hand. In her other hand, a bag of crisps.
You know anyone in the muslin field?
Yes. I know everyone.
He sidles further in.
Do you have a fallback position?
Mask? No, I don't need one.
Right.
Are you saying I do?
No. I wouldn't say that. No.
No. Good.
She lays down the bag of crisps and licks her fingers. Her eyes are fixed on the television.
I'm thirsty now. Can I have a beer? I told him to get me some in.
What did he say?
He said it were a slippery slope.
Morris opens a beer bottle.
Oh.
Morris is in the kitchen. He turns to see the girl standing in the doorway, leaning against the frame. He hands her the bottle and she swigs from it, long and hard. Ian is on his bed asleep.
Ian.
Morris picks up the little bell and grins. He lays a blanket over Ian, who's on his back.
It won't be as good as Celebrity Love Island, but it'll be live.
Live?
You might enjoy it.
The girl in her pink jeans and top is back in the doorway. Across from the Royal Court Theatre, a tree is festooned with fairy lights. Morris and the girl stand on the pavement.
Can't we go see Lion King?
What a good idea.
On stage.
Oh, come on, you minger.
What a mess you've made.
Oh, God. No. No, no! Stupid cunt. You're in the biggest trouble of your life.
Come on.
Don't make me stand here on my own, you cunts! I can't stand it.
Come with us.
Now I've got no one.
A woman talks to Morris.
I so loved you in the Dickens the other night.
You noticed me?
Don't be silly. Of course I did. You were very funny and clever.
Thank you. Gillian?
Gillian.
The woman leaves. Morris sits down in the theatre bar opposite the girl.
You're famous.
A little bit.
What's your name again?
Morris. Morris Russell.
All right.
He knocks back his scotch.
Isn't it the end?
It's never the end when you go to the theatre, I'm afraid.
Come on.
Are you taking me somewhere?
She drinks her beer.
Yeah.
Oh, wonderful.
As he dons his coat, she drains his bottle. Later, they're in a dark bar.
I'll have a mechanic breather.
Me too. What is it?
It's red.
Oh, good. Like wine? Getting on well with Uncle Ian?
You know anything about fish?
Fuck all, my dear. You?
Book all.
You could consult a book.
A book?
Yeah, you know, two flaps of cardboard with printed pages in between.
Do you read a lot?
Only when there's no one to talk to.
He watches her finish off the contents of her bottle.
And then down the street. Another?
He places a hand on her thigh. She brushes it away.
I'll let you get me one more.
Oh, thank you.
To the guy beside him.
Excuse me.
I think he's sweating on me. I think he's gone in my mouth.
I'm sure you swallowed worse.
Shit.
In a taxi.
I think I'm going to be sick.
The cab driver watches anxiously in his rearview mirror. Morris tentatively moves his hand towards the girl. The girl turns away from Morris, then back, and leans her head on his shoulder, her eyes closed. Morris reaches his hand up and tenderly touches her cheek. He sees the driver's eyes in the mirror. The taxi makes its serene way through the streets of London, the lights and shop signs reflecting on its bodywork. The couple arrive back at Ian's. The semi-conscious girl has an arm around Morris's shoulder. He shuffles her to her room and lets her flop onto the bed.
Whoops.
Morris stares at her, then leans down and removes the strappy high-heeled sandals the girl's wearing. His hand lingers on her foot for a moment as she sleeps. He He ambles out into the hall past a coat stand and plant.
Oh, fuck!
Jeez!
Dad! Dad! Don't leave us!
Going.
Oh, don't leave us! Going. No, no, goodbye! Goodbye!
Goodbye, Dad!
And cut. Yeah, very good.
All right, thanks, everybody. On a TV set, Morris lies in pyjamas on a hospital bed with a drip attached. As he's wheeled off set, he puts a cigar in his mouth and lights it. One of the crew leaves the group he's with and strolls over to Morris.
You okay?
I think I'm going to die.
Not by yet, Morris. We haven't shot them carrying the body out yet.
Morris puffs away on his cigar.
Hello.
Later, another crew member strides over to Morris and hands him an envelope.
Here, Mr. Russell, as requested.
Thanks, old chap. May I take some of these cakes?
Sure, why not? I'll pack some up for you.
Thank you.
Morris is sitting leaning against a wall beside a table with cups and food on it. He rises and pats the crew member's shoulder as he passes him. It's dark when Morris, a woolly hat on his head, walks along a street. He glances up at one of the houses. Morris is changing a ceiling light bulb. A woman sits beside him.
I'm in such pain, dear. I don't want to live.
Yes, you do. Almost all of us want you to live.
Munching a chocolate eclair, the woman leans on a crutch. She looks up and laughs.
I have to have an operation.
What is it?
Prostate. I'm sure it's just routine.
Oh, Morris, I'm so sorry.
You've always wanted to remove my balls surgically.
Oh, these cakes are awfully nice.
She hobbles to the light switch.
Action.
Bravo.
I've been at it like a dog all day. I'm utterly broken.
What were you playing?
A corpse, more or less.
Typecast again.
She wafts a piece of paper like a fan. He hands her banknotes.
Here. I asked them for cash.
Well, not all of it.
Please take it. Put it towards the boiler. It gets cold in here.
She gives him back some money.
Oh, you think useless.
She struggles to her feet.
It's all got to be replaced, Morris. The radiator's everything. The man came yesterday.
I owe you thousands. Over the years. You'll be more than generous. I haven't forgotten.
No.
Can't the children contribute?
Can't we look after ourselves in our old age?
She turns to the sink and he lowers his eyes. Morris is in the cabin cafe beside a large man. They're both reading newspapers. A younger man is at a table nearby drinking from a mug.
Oh, Sammy's gone.
He has? Christ.
Big picture of him here as a handsome young spunker.
Another one down.
Yeah.
Wonder how many lines I'll get.
Morris looks at the large man.
Paragraph.
Ian runs across the road.
Lo, here comes Caesar.
And moving rather rapidly for someone who just picked up his disability check.
Oh, God.
Hello, love.
Thank Christ she's asleep now. She's drunk all my best stolly and the scotch. She's even put away the drambuie I was saving for your Christmas visit.
God, no.
I bought this lovely bit of halibut yesterday, but she didn't know what to do with it.
Dear Jesus.
Her notion of cooking is to stick a plate of virtual sick into the microwave.
Well, can't you call the police?
That's a very good idea.
Oh, just kill them. Kill the young. Exterminate their disgusting happiness and hope.
This is not fucking funny. I've got high blood pressure. Now, I could die at any moment.
Why doesn't she just go back home?
I rang my niece. I begged her. I wept more than Antigone. I said I'd pay for the taxi to wherever. You know, Martha said there is no job in the countryside.
Well, there's some demand for barmaids and prostitutes.
Yeah, I mean, even in the country, they need young women to lap dance.
What?
You can learn a lot from the television.
Look, the fact is, Martha just doesn't want her back, but to unleash her on us, like this.
Maliciously.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's pure evil.
Of course it is.
Evil.
Yeah. Did your niece do it deliberately?
What? You men are laughing at me.
Let's think about this collectively.
Please.
We hate to see you suffer, Ian.
Oh, Pete, Morris, you're fond of women, and all women, and you're resourceful. Help me.
You couldn't have come to a better man. A scientist of the female heart.
A professor of pussy.
That's it.
Fucking shut it, Donald! Yeah. You're really getting on my nerves!
Fucking shut it, Donald. You're really getting on my nerves.
Fucking shut it!
Fucking shut it!
Morris is at Ian's front door. The girl opens it.
Is it doctors?
Good.
What?
After scouring the earth on your behalf, Jesse, I'm here to announce I've got you a job.
Liar.
It's true. Modelling.
You've done that?
Yeah. Pleased? I said you could rely on me.
Well, what sort of clothes is it? Do you think I'll get to keep them at the end?
I'm not sure about that.
Why not?
There's no actual clothes involved.
What, none at all?
No. Not as such. No. No clothes. None at all.
You're having me do a porno? I'm not letting anyone I know see me chuffs and bumps.
It's not like that.
What's it like then?
You'll see.
You better not be trying to corrupt me.
I am shocked, Jessie, that you would think of me like this. I am a respectable and respected man.
Oh, yeah, right.
Chuffs and bumps. I've never heard that before.
Now you're thinking about it.
I'm not, I promise you.
You think about something else.
I shall.
He puffs on a small cigar as Jessie chomps into a doorstep sandwich. She's staring at the floor.
When do I start?
In a corridor.
Don't keep touching me!
For a moment there, I thought my legs might go. Well,
that's no reason to cling on. Just let yourself fall to the ground, natural-like.
Thank you.
A group of people sit in front of easels and watch as Jessie, a robe wrapped around herself, emerges from behind a screen. Morris is one of the artists.
I can't do it with anyone I know watching.
You've got to be professional, my dear.
But I'm nervous.
So am I.
I am frightened, okay?
Mr. Russell, if you don't mind.
What?
Could you, please?
Morris stares at the art teacher, then slams down his crayon and slowly gets to his feet. He looks around the class.
Thank you and good night.
He about turns and shuffles out of the room. All eyes turn to Jessie, who steps forward, the striped robe still wrapped around her. In the corridor, Morris sidles up to a door with a glass window above it. He stands on tiptoe in an effort to see through the window. Morris upturns a paper bin, spilling its contents onto the floor, then steps up onto it. Inside the room, Jessie has bared her shoulders. Her hands clasp the robe tight over her bosom. Her eyes are wary. Morris peeps in and sees her bare back. He slips. The door swings open with Morris clinging to it. Jessie rises from the couch as he staggers into an easel by the door.
Everything all right? You won't be able to do it if you can't relax and let people look at you. It's the human form, as it is, naked in its weakness and beauty.
Oh, yeah.
They're in Trafalgar Square.
What would your mother say?
She says if I weren't born, she'd be better off.
They walk up to the National Gallery.
Push it.
This is it.
Inside, Morris leads Jessie to a gallery with several framed portraits on the wall. The first, a man standing, then a portrait of a bearded man's face. He stops by a third.
There.
A rear view of a female nude.
You see?
Jessie reads.
Is her name Venus?
No. Venus is a goddess, accompanied by Eros. She creates love and desire in us mortals, leading often to foolishness and despair. The usual shit. For most men, a woman's body is the most beautiful thing they will ever see.
What's the most beautiful thing a girl sees? Do you know?
Her first child.
Jessie stares up at the old man's face, then blinks, turns her head and strides away from him.
All right.
On their way out.
I'm not doing any more of that modelling, I can tell you that.
The model for Venus was a real woman just like you. That's what caused all the fuss.
Do a bit, then.
Now?
If you're so good at it.
Is this a dagger which I see before me? The handle toward my hand? Come, let me clutch thee. I have thee not, and yet I see thee still. Now, tell me, who wrote that?
I don't know.
Really?
All right then, smart ass. What about this? I should be so lucky, 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 lucky. I should be so lucky. Well, who wrote it?
Not a clue.
Well, there you are then.
They're by the Thames.
Hey, it's like a beach down there.
They lean on the railings of a jetty by Blackfriars Bridge.
I lived by the sea when I was a child. It always calms me. Shall we go to the seaside, Venus?
I'd rather go to Topshop.
I'll take you to lunch.
Take me somewhere posh.
Posh?
Well, I want to meet someone really famous, not just you.
In Chando's sandwich bar.
Who are these bastards?
Some of these arseholes were very well known.
For what?
You cheer me up, you know.
You have a laugh at me, don't you?
Just a little.
I'll get you back.
You will.
Don't you worry.
She turns away from the framed photographs to munch her food. Morris enters Heathview, the apartment block where Ian lives.
Keep still. It's not surgery.
I don't trust you.
Morris is cutting Ian's toenails.
Got it, a palpable hit. But where has the little fucker gone?
Who cares? It's free now.
I can't have my home scattered with toenails.
Oh, God. I'll have to get my other glasses.
Around your fucking neck.
Oh, thank you. Where's that bastard toenail?
Ah! There's the little fucker.
Oh. How's Valerie?
Phoning me continuously with complaints.
You're her husband.
Am I?
Yeah. You did one of your runners, if you remember.
Did I? For I never wanted to be independent.
I love it.
Ian is seated. Morris stands opposite him.
I am about to die, and I know nothing about myself.
Ian glances at him, then lowers his head.
You have been loved, though, Morris. You've been adored.
Yes. And so have you, Ian. A little bit. Except you didn't always notice it.
Oh, he got the bloody back.
Morris helps Ian to his feet.
No, you can't cling to me like this, Ian. We'll both go down.
Put me on my feet then, you silly old fool.
You're on your feet.
Yeah, well, thank you.
Not at all.
They stand supporting each other as if ready to dance. Morris taps Ian gently on the cheeks and walks towards the window. He picks up an apple, bounces it off his arm and catches it. He pretends to bowl it.
To keep the little minx away from you, I'm going to sacrifice my day by taking her shopping.
Marvellous!
Well, I need 20 quid for refreshments.
Done.
Good boy. What are you going to do?
I need to lie down. She's exhausted me. I'm going to have a pre-nap nap.
Where is she?
Dead, I'm sure of it.
Are you absolutely certain?
There'll be no sign of life for several hours.
Morris pushes open the door to Jessie's bedroom. He steps inside to see her lying face down. Her pink sheets are pulled back, revealing her bare left shoulder blade, upper arm, and left lower leg.
Don't do that.
Four beer cans are lined up on the windowsill by her bed.
Coming with me today?
You want me to?
She pulls the sheet up over her body.
Okay.
Get up, then.
I haven't got anything to wear.
I can't think of anything more enraging, my dear.
She looks at him through the strands of hair covering her face. In a shop, Jessie hands Morris hangers as she walks from rail to rail. She piles the clothes onto him as he follows her meekly around.
God taken in, we feasted on olives from the fridge. We stood alone.
Morris struggles for breath and supports himself on a rail.
If you try and look at me, I'll...
Look! I am losing the will to live, Venus.
Your eyes out, stick them up your ass.
She goes into a changing room. He stands and waits outside its doors. He raises his head as she walks out.
Does it suit me?
Yeah. Oh, yes.
In what way?
In all possible ways. It goes with your...
What?
Nail varnish.
I'm not wearing nail varnish.
Beautiful.
She's wearing a sleeveless black dress with two narrow straps over the shoulders. It's knee length and floaty.
Next.
They're at the cash desk.
It's lovely, isn't it?
Morris.
Your bag. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
See you.
Thank you.
How will you be paying, sir?
Oh, yes, right.
As a queue forms behind them, Morris searches in his coat, jacket, and trouser pockets. He hauls something out and holds it up.
What's that?
One of Uncle Ian's toenail clippings.
Oh, my God.
Otherwise, I'm afraid I've only got a 20.
The saleswoman keeps the dress.
Next.
Distraught, Jessie strides away.
Jessie!
Outside on the street.
Jessie!
She marches back to him.
You humiliated me!
She pinches him.
Oh, that'll teach you!
Well, we can go to have lunch.
I never want to see you again. Now I can never go back into that shop.
She pinches him again. He recoils and she stomps off. She runs away down the street. Morris breaks into a trot, but not for long. As a white van passes, Morris leans against a rail. On a tray, a razor, shaving foam and a flannel. Carrying the tray along a hospital corridor is a cheerful, grey-haired woman. She comes up to Morris in a bed.
You ready?
Christ. Will it hurt?
Only if you struggle.
Shh.
Come on now. Well, this might be a bit cold. Oh, it's all right.
She's pulled a curtain round the bed.
Just relax.
Jesus! Everything all right here? Now, I've done hundreds of these. There's a strong chance of impotence and incontinence, but you won't be dead, and that is a result. OK, let's get him to theatre.
He's wheeled along the corridor.
Here we go. I've always liked the theatre.
Ian is at Morris's hospital bedside.
Why didn't you tell me?
Oh, you know. I didn't want to think about it. I hate sympathy.
But you wouldn't have got any from me.
I know. You're a true friend. How's the nurse?
It's agony. I told her to be on her way.
Where will she go?
That's up to her. They always need people in Africa, I hear.
Ian takes a look round the ward.
It hardly seems worth going home.
Ian and Morris stare at the other old patients on the ward. Morris seems lost in thought. Later, he shuffles through the hospital in slippers and holding a carrier bag at his side.
Why not? I am a free man.
I just wouldn't recommend it, that's all. Not for someone so soon after an operation. Why don't you wait to see the doctor?
Because there are people I need to see.
Well, can't they come here?
No!
He's bent over a counter, holding onto it for support. The young nurse glares at him. Morris picks up his bag. In Ian's apartment, Jessie opens the front door. Morris is on the landing. Jessie stares.
Hello.
Hello, Jessie.
It's you.
Yeah, it is. More or less.
Why didn't you tell me you were having an operation?
I didn't want to cheer you up.
Oh. Yeah.
She cuts the hospital tag from around his wrist.
Free at last.
I'm glad.
What?
I'm glad, you know.
I'm glad you're back.
Jessie, in jeans and a horizontally striped crop top, sidles away from him down the hall. Morris watches her go, then turns towards the living room door.
Well, well, well. How are you, my old fruit? Do you think Jessie will cut my toenails?
I wouldn't hurt her near my body with anything sharp.
No.
What's that smell?
Cologne.
No. Oh. Get rid of it. It's making me vertiginous.
Drinks, gentlemen?
Well, this is unusual, Jessie. Are you on ketamine? GBH or just the mushrooms?
Very good, Uncle.
You see, Morris, I'm contemporary.
Right.
No, I can't see.
What?
I can't see. Put it somewhere else.
Where?
Somewhere else. There. Where you like? We're there over there. Cut.
She carries a tray over to the table.
I can't breathe.
Stop shouting, then.
I can't get through to you otherwise. Oh, no. No.
What now?
Oh, God. Everyone knows you don't put milk in lemon tea.
You like milk.
I've told you only on my cereal, not on anything else.
You like it in your hot chocolate.
What?
I said, you like it in your hot chocolate.
God, I'm exhausted. I really am. Fan me, Morris, before I expire.
Nuts, anyone?
She's given Morris a whiskey.
Bloody nuts. Come on. Oh, I can't wait to get back to work. I'll take anything.
Really?
Except corpses. No, I don't need that.
I've cornered the market there.
If I don't get anything, I'll write my memoirs.
That shouldn't take long.
What? What do you do to her at your age?
It's a very difficult thing. But I'm nice to her.
Yeah?
Ian stares blankly up at Morris.
I'll make you a cup of tea.
Thank you.
Ian sits in his armchair and watches the TV. Jessie is sitting at the kitchen table, poring over a magazine, a cigarette in her right hand. She takes a puff, then looks up as Morris limps into the room. Her eyes are fixed on him as he goes over to the worktop. Morris turns and gazes at her.
I will die soon, Venus. Can I touch your hand?
That's one child line I haven't heard.
I'm impotent, of course.
Thank Christ.
But I can still take a theoretical interest.
Jessie looks down, then raises her head to meet his gaze.
Have you been thinking about me?
All the time I was in hospital.
What did you think about me?
I saw your body.
Which part?
Your hair. Your feet. Your legs, your behind, your eyes.
My eyes?
Your elbow. Your cunt.
She stares at him through her dark, broody eyes.
Oh, shut up.
She drags on her cigarette, then glances at the magazine in front of her before looking away. Her eyes move to look at Morris.
You can touch my hand.
Morris limps stiffly forward and takes a seat at the table. He grasps her left hand in his two hands, then turns it to be palm upwards. He studies her palm. Her arm hovering a few inches above the tabletop, Morris gently strokes her palm, his head bent over it. He raises her hand towards his lips.
Only with your fingers. Anything else will make me vomit this.
Morris grins broadly.
Can I ask you? Have you ever been loved before?
Jessie frowns, removes her hand from his, then leans back in the chair. She half smiles, then grins. Another day he's on the phone.
I can do it. I want to do it. I am well enough. I need the money.
Thank you. But I will need a big car. An enormous fucker.
You must be really famous.
I am. It's a really important role. The linchpin of the story. Yep. It's also a speaking part. I'll explain everything to you on the way. I think you should work in films.
There?
Definitely, yes.
Hey, can we open the roof?
The driver of the stretch limo checks his rearview mirror, then presses a switch above his head. The roof opens, and Jessie gets to her feet to stick her head out. Her checked miniskirt reveals her legs. Jessie and Morris enjoy their respective views of London and her legs.
This is wicked!
Turn it up, my man! More volume!
The sun shines on the car roof as Jessie's hair, no longer tied up, falls over her shoulders. Inside, Morris conducts. Leaves of a tree are silhouetted against a grey morning sky. The tree grows by a mansion house with a centre block, two wings, and a colonnaded entrance. People with umbrellas mill around caravans and trucks. Two men manoeuvre something under a blanket perched on a tripod. The rear of the house has a lake in a hollow, and lawns running up to the house from the water. Inside, filming is underway.
You will see how fickle men are in love. Just like women.
I will not believe it until I see it with my own eyes.
They come.
You're in love with another?
I don't love you!
But my body cannot do without your hands!
Morris is a 19th century dress.
You see? But when it comes to love, men...
Morris staggers. His fellow actor supports him.
Envoy.
You okay, Morris? Someone bring him a chair.
It's hot. These clothes are heavy.
The focus puller opens the camera's matte box and checks inside. The assistant cameraman shines a torch in it.
Barry.
Oh, thank you. So
Barry.
Much.
Jessie watches avidly.
We don't have any left, will we?
Get it from this angle.
All right, well, let's sit on the mission. We're going to have to move on. Well, let's give him 2 minutes, but thank you.
Morris sees Jessie and smiles.
Okay.
Wearing a wig, his face rouged and a mole on it, Morris gets to his feet.
Ready?
The filming continues.
I'm sorry, my love, but we must part for good. I am not the man to make you happy, and so we must say goodbye.
The actress reads from a letter. Watching, Jessie pours tea from a flask for Morris. Jessie's eyes are wide and fixed on the actress.
Oh, sure. Sure.
Outside the house in a caravan.
How did she do it? I could never have done that.
I'm sure you could.
I didn't realise it was so hard. It's brilliant. I could never do that.
Mind you, she's terribly pretty.
Am I not?
Oh, Venus.
Now you've upset me. Jesus, Morris, you never learn.
Sorry.
You will be.
My dear, will you pass me my trousers?
Jessie screws the top back on a plastic drinks bottle, finds his trousers, and wanders through to Morris, who's sitting on a bed.
What is that?
A catheter.
Oh, my God.
I think it's leaking.
Well, don't want it on my shoes. You're always dripping, Morris.
Oh, hold on.
Well, there's always bits of you where there shouldn't be.
Pass me that towel.
Morris grabs the towel, limps through to a chair, then drapes the towel over the catheter and bag.
Come in.
You lost the cash.
Thank you.
Morris takes an envelope and starts to open it.
I wonder if the shops are open.
Do you think they'll suit me?
I don't know. Let me look in your ears.
They're outside a jeweller's shop.
Perfect. Don't touch.
I know.
It's dark. Lights are on.
Come on. Have you got the bloody money this time?
Oh, yes. Tons of it. I've got a pocket full.
They enter the shop. A train crosses an urban bridge. In Morris's flat, Jessie puts in an earring. She stands in front of a mirror. Morris walks up to her. He cocks his head to one side and watches as she puts in the second earring.
I think I'm going to wear these tonight.
Venus? You look like a movie star.
He pulls the hair back from her ear and examines the diamond stud. He looks at her neck and shoulder before leaning in to kiss her tenderly on the neck. She stares at her reflection in the mirror as Morris straightens up and leans his head on hers.
Is that an old man, Elder?
Not so much this evening.
I wonder why.
He rubs his face on her hair.
You can kiss my shoulders.
Can I?
Three kisses.
He kisses the tip of her shoulder, then moves closer to her neck to plant another kiss. He nuzzles her neck. She draws back.
Three, I said. And no licking and burping, you dirty filthy old shithead.
Oh, you please me.
And you me.
Morris, standing behind Jessie, moves his hand to her breast. She thumps him.
Steady, steady. Oh. I'm just out of intensive care.
Well, you asked for it, Morris. You know you do with your forwardness.
Jessie turns to face him.
Don't you believe in anything, Morris?
Pleasure I like. I've tried to give pleasure. That's all I recommend to anyone.
You've made me sticky with your slug tongue. I think I'll have a bath.
Well, well. I'll run it for you.
In the bath, Jessie ducks her head underwater, then sits back up. Morris sits outside the bathroom's closed door.
The other man who loved you. Was he not kind to you?
He was kind. For a time. He promised me things. He bought me stuff. We had champagne. And there were roses.
Then you got pregnant.
Does everyone know?
It's happened to girls before.
The reflection of the bathwater glistens on the tiles.
Then he stopped being kind. He went the other way. A long way that way.
She stares forlornly out.
You were engaged. I didn't know. It wasn't a miscarriage. My mum called it that. It were an abortion. And she made me.
Terrible.
Yeah.
Morris rolls his head to one side, his floppy white hair falling over his forehead.
Shall I compare thee to a summer's day? Thou art more lovely and more temperate. Rough winds do shake the darling buds of May, and summer's lease hath all too short a date. Sometime too hot the eye of heaven shines, and oft is his gold complexion dimmed. And every fair from fair sometime declines, by chance or nature's changing course untrimmed. For thy eternal summer shall not fade, nor lose possession of that fair thou owest. Nor shall death brag thou wanderest in his shade when in eternal lines to time thou growest. So long as men can breathe and eyes can see, so long lives this, and this gives life to thee.
Jessie is out of the bath, a towel tied around her. She stares wide-eyed as she listens to Morris. He's by the closed door.
Venus?
Wearing a bathrobe, Jessie opens the door. Morris holds out two glasses. She takes one.
Thank you.
You look wonderful. Luminous. Bright. Startling.
Do I?
Jessie smiles. They both drink.
That story I told you?
Yes.
You don't think I'm low, do you?
No. Let's have dinner.
No, Morris, I'm going out.
Oh, what a shame. Anywhere nice?
A party.
Alone?
With a boy.
Jolly good. Which boy?
Keep your nose out.
Of course. You can go to the party for an hour, and we can meet later.
It's an all-night party.
Right. How will you stay up all night?
I'll manage.
Uncle Ian will worry.
It's all right. I've already asked him. I think he'll be pleased to get rid of me. I don't think he likes me very much. He thinks I'm horrible.
He does? But I like you, Venus. I like you. I love you.
Dressed to go, she stares at him.
Bye.
Can we meet tomorrow?
Yeah, okay. I'll meet you after lunch by canal. Thanks for the earrings.
Jessie trips down the stairs from the sitting room and turns left in the hallway. Morris just sits in the dark room and gazes around it. It's a grey day. Morris, wearing a coat and his woolly hat, leans against railings by the canal. A boat behind him, a bridge in the distance lit up. He glances at a girl in a white hat as she passes him. Then he turns to face the water. Time wears on. Morris remains by the canal, eventually sitting down on a bench as darkness falls. In the dark, a cyclist with a luminous vest passes the empty bench. Morning, Morris is at home. Valerie answers her door.
Hello.
Hello.
Have I forgotten? Did I invite you?
No, I invited you. And I wanted to see you.
Did you?
She follows him inside.
Good God.
Her black and white cat is on the table, and Morris is in the kitchen.
Morris! Morris! Quickly!
Why do you keep shouting when I am cooking?
You're on TV! Look, look!
He moves to the hallway.
Oh, Christ.
Ah, how handsome you were.
He sips champagne.
There's that woman.
Yeah, yeah.
Who took you away from us.
It's burning.
You will burn, Morris.
Yes, dear.
Get my guts off in order. Mmm, so good.
The cat vanished. Valerie and Morris eat a candlelit dinner.
You were a good mother. I rather left you holding the babies, didn't I?
You did do that. Three children under six, to be exact.
I can see it must have been inconvenient.
But you put your own pleasure first.
Valerie stares at him through her dark-framed spectacles. He has a hand on his head.
I did love you. For a time. And for the rest of the time, I was fond of you.
Please, no.
More than
no,
fond
don't.
Of you.
Don't. You don't have to. I don't want it.
It's my goodbye to you.
Why, where are you going?
Morris takes his hand away from his head. The candlelight illuminates his smiling features. He gazes intently at Valerie, who shifts uneasily.
We won't live forever.
No.
As Valerie continues to eat, Morris lowers his head. His soft hair flops forward. Valerie moves towards him and rests her head against his hair. She places her right hand on his shoulder, then strokes the nape of his neck. Morris raises his head and gazes into her eyes. He reaches out his hand and runs it through her hair. He strokes her cheek tenderly. Morris leans closer. He closes his eyes, and their lips touch in an embrace. Their lips part. Morris moves his head away, and Valerie slowly opens her eyes to look into his face. Morris returns the look, then smiles. A train crosses the bridge by Morris's flat. He sits on his bed, staring out of a window. Illuminated by the streetlights, Morris's hue takes on an amber glow. Day. Morris sits alone in a bar, abstractedly pouring the contents of a bottle into a glass and drinking from it. The woolly hat is on his head. Ian, passing the bar, stops and peers in through the glass facade. He and Morris climb the staircase of a members' club.
You looked rather forlorn.
This is a rare treat, my friend.
There are no pockets in the shroud. Oh, God. It's a long way up, eh? Huh?
The club has a look of decaying opulence.
57, I first saw you.
You what?
You were a strapping Laertes.
Strapping? Yeah, sounds like me.
The Ophelia was something of a minger. You wore a kilt, if I'm not mistaken.
Bloody Peter Hall. Mm-hmm.
They sit in armchairs drinking from crystal glasses.
I love this horrible place. It reminds me of what I wanted to become.
Ian slips almost into a reverie.
Another large one.
Yes.
Morris downs his drink and holds his glass up in the air.
Yeah.
Come on.
Right.
What a good idea.
What?
They stagger along the pavement.
What?
Listen.
What?
Sit. Oh, God.
It's Ted. The old man.
The two old friends enter a church, lit dimly by candelabra hanging from the ceiling. Morris removes his woolly hat. Ian uses a cane and leans an arm against a column for support. They read a plaque.
Boris Karloff.
Yeah, I know. He was a sweetie, apparently.
Mr. Pratt.
Robert Shaw. Richard Beckinsale. They're running out of room here.
Luckily, Ian isn't a long name.
Ian playfully takes a swipe at Morris, whose hand is on Ian's shoulder. They stop at Lawrence Harvey's plaque. They turn to see a string quartet at the front of the nave. Morris steps up to Ian.
shall we?
Oh, yes.
The two men start to dance with each other, Ian awkwardly holding onto his cane as they twirl to the music. Ian raises his left hand high, and Morris spins clumsily under it. They then dance sedately in a circle, lost in the music. Morris rests his head on Ian's chest, then raises his head and slips his arm around Ian's shoulders. At home, Morris sits in semi-darkness, a book in his hands. Morris toys with the book, ready to flip over a page, but only occasionally reading. He looks across at the record player and sees the stylus come to the end of the piece. Morris crosses to the record player, but leans over it to press down the Venetian blind to look out of the window behind it. Morris opens his front door. Jessie sits at the table in Morris's flat.
I'm sorry I didn't come to meet you. You can smell my neck.
I can?
You can. No kissing. That'd make me never come back.
I understand.
Morris pushes himself up from the table and saunters across to stand behind Jessie. She sits stiffly as he touches her long hair, then bends to sniff the left side of her neck. Morris lets his head linger close to her neck.
You like to do this, don't you?
There really isn't anything else.
Morris?
Yes?
I want something.
You do? I'm sure it's something I'll have to think about.
For how long?
I don't know.
Morris sits back down opposite Jessie.
Why don't we move things on a little?
How could we do that?
I want to give you a treat.
You do?
I want to cheer you up.
Yeah? How? How?
What?
He leans his arms on the table as Jessie pushes her left hand up under her short skirt and leaves it there for a moment. She withdraws her hand. She proffers it to him, palm upwards. He takes her hand, then moves his mouth towards it. She goes to strike him with her other hand, but he grabs her by the arm. They face each other off. She shirks her left hand free, then wriggles. He releases her arm. Morris leans his elbow on the banister beside the table and stares at her. He's with Jessie at a tattoo parlor.
Thanks, Morris.
She's having a snake tattooed onto the arch of her hand between the base of her thumb and forefinger. Jessie looks up at Morris. Then her gaze moves beyond him. He turns to look out of the window. There's a young man outside leaning on a green wheelie bin. Morris and Jessie both look at him. He has a gaunt, dour face with hollow cheeks. He's wearing a baseball cap and an anorak. He has a snake tattoo on the arch of his right hand and a ring on his forefinger. Morris is slumped in the cabin cafe. He wakes when Ian and Donald walk in and raises a paper in greeting. Ian ushers Donald to another table away from Morris.
Sit.
Donald seems puzzled and squeezes onto the bench seat. Ian takes a chair and places it so his back is to Morris. Morris heaves himself out of his seat and shuffles over to the other two. Donald raises his eyes and Morris sits down by Ian, who turns his head away.
You insult me.
On the contrary, the insult is on the other side.
How so?
Do I look like a fool? Do I? Answer me.
Don't tempt me. I haven't had my tranquilizer yet.
Yes, you're easily tempted, as we know. I've been questioning my niece's daughter very closely in search of the facts.
You begged me to find her work.
You have degraded that girl. Jessie is a shy, provincial girl. To take advantage of such a vulnerable young person, to take her to a drinking establishment, ply her with alcohol...
She plied me.
Oh. Ian reaches into his coat pocket.
Yes, well, did you buy these? Huh? These?
The diamond earrings.
Hmm?
This is ridiculous.
She said you paid for her to be tattooed. Did you?
It was a small snake.
Well, well, well.
You never welcomed her. You called her vile.
That is a lie.
What? Now, hang on, Ian, old man. You have to admit, you did have one or two little reservations about her character.
How dare you? What the hell do you mean?
Well, you handed her that halibut and expected her to...
To what? To cook it? Mm. That's all. That's perverted exploitation. But to be so desperate to behave without respect for me... Now you strike me!
Morris, please, we come here every day. They bring us croissant with our coffee.
Did you see? I have been struck.
Get some sense into your thick skull before you die here!
Venomous rat! A dying man.
A bloody fool, too! What?
Let's have you! I'll take you on!
Where are we going?
Don't eat this!
He hit me again!
Come on! What is this? Catheters at dawn?
No, shut up!
I wasn't the bar, you two troublemakers!
He started!
I did not!
Yes!
Out of here! Out!
Hold on! I'm going!
Get out of here! Get out!
Smacking each other with rolled-up newspapers, Morris and Ian move towards the door. Morris leaves. His flat is in a triangular-shaped building backing onto two railway bridges. He sits staring out of the window. He opens his door to Jessie and stands facing her. Behind her in a doorway across the street is the young man.
Hiya.
She turns to look at the guy, who puffs out a mouthful of cigarette smoke.
Can we come in?
Morris lowers his head, then takes a pace back. Jessie glances round at the guy, then steps into the flat. In the living room, Morris and Jessie are seated, Jessie fiddling with her fingers. The guy, his hands in his pockets, is prowling around looking at Morris's collection of books. Jessie gets to her feet and crosses over to the guy, now sitting on a sofa, puffing on a cigarette. His cap and anorak are off. She stands in front of him.
Go on, ask him.
Jessie, wearing a bomber jacket with a fur-trimmed hood, turns and walks back over to Morris, who's slouched over an upright chair.
Morris. Do you want to go for a little walk?
Exercise is good for some people, I've heard.
She glances back over to the guy. Morris saunters along the side of the canal.
And often it is gold complexion dim.
He strolls through a park with the BT tower in the background. Morris shuffles through fallen leaves as an urban fox scuttles past. Morris makes his way into an open-air theatre. He stands, center stage, looking out at the green tarpaulin-covered raked seats. Behind him, two stone statues. Voices ring in his head. He speaks.
To be or not to be, that is the question.
Morris remains standing, legs apart, staring at the covered seats in a vast semicircle in front of him. There are gangways up to the rows, and a sound and lighting gallery in what looks like a cabin, perched above the central back rows. Morris returns home. The bedroom.
I finished it. Oh, I keep hair on. Keep hair on.
Now with clothes on, the three of them are in the kitchen. The guy looks in a cupboard. He swaggers over to Morris.
You invited us in, old man.
Come on, let's go.
The young guy stares at Morris.
And you are a dirty, dirty old man.
And you? Oh, no way.
Morris punches the youth.
Oh, no, not the stick. I'm really frightened, Grandad.
Jessie grabs Morris's walking stick and he topples over, outside.
Come on! Leave the fucking door! What's the fucking...
Oh, come on! Let this fucking iron anyway!
Come on, Nina!
Fucking problem!
You stupid bastard, what have you done?
The two of them beat a hasty retreat from the flat, run round the corner and under the bridge. A nightclub. Jessie dances, and the guy pops pills and downs them with gulps from a bottle. Jessie looks sad as she pushes her way through the crowded dance floor. Night, she runs towards Morris's flat. A train passes overhead.
Murray! Open the door, Murray!
Morning. Inside the flat, police, paramedics, Jessie and Ian are in the living room.
Are you responsible for this?
Hmm? A PC comes over.
Hello?
Yes?
Apparently there was an intruder. There's no sign of forced entry. He was knocked down.
Who was it?
Well, I did ask for a description, and all he could say was he was damned ugly.
It's a white male. He's only 70.
Romeo, uniform.
Well, you have to take it in.
Okay, the worst comes to the worst. Tomorrow morning, I'll be...
Alpha, uniform.
All right.
Romeo.
You can't stay here alone.
Yeah, Charlie, Echo.
I'll phone you back. Hi, I'm having some trouble getting a bed. He needs someone with him. Are you on?
No, of course not. I could die at any moment myself. I've got high blood pressure. I've got chronic anxiety, burning indigestion.
They all turn to face the bedroom.
Who the hell's Venus?
I am.
He wants to see you. He's asked if you look after him.
Her?
Yes.
Jessie turns away from Ian and walks across the living room towards the bedroom. The doctor follows her in. Ian sits himself down on the sofa. Morris is lying on his back in bed, his pajamas on. Jessie fusses over the covers for him.
I'm sorry. Please forgive me. Let it go, Morris. I'll do anything.
She sits on the bed, stroking his hair.
Please. I'll never be mean again.
Jessie brushes the wooden parquet floor of the living room. Then with the handbrush and pan, she sweeps up the pile of dust. She steps into the bedroom, a glass of water in her hand.
Morris?
His eyes are open.
Morris? Can you hear me? Make a sign. Morris?
There's no movement. Jessie sets down the glass. Jessie undoes her bra, then stretches up her crop top, revealing her breasts.
Look, Morris.
She stands at the foot of the bed, leaning forward at a slight angle. Morris lies still, his breathing shallow. Jessie lowers her top. She works in the kitchen and sits at his bedside reading.
Weary with toil, I haste me to my bed. The day reposeful limbs with travail tired. But then begins a journey in my head.
His lips start moving.
What do you want?
She lays down the book, then, sweeping her hair away from her ear, leans over him. Morris, in his striped dressing gown, leans on Jessie for support as she struggles to help him plod his weary way through to the bathroom.
Well, they're coming to take you to hospital now.
He's on the toilet.
Well, I've got you.
Morris.
I have got a much better idea.
Have you?
He stretches out his hand towards her. Jessie helps him into the back of a black cab. It moves away as an ambulance turns the corner to stop outside his front door. A train leaves London Victoria Station. As it picks up speed, the houses and buildings of the conurbation shoot by. The houses give way to trees and fields. The train stops. Beyond the bare winter trees is a stretch of water. Then in the distance, hills. The train moves off again, past more fields, under a cloudy sky. Houses flash past, and more water with boats on it, as the train crosses a metal bridge. Yet more fields and houses under a now blue sky. The train slows to a halt at Whitstable Station. When it pulls out of Whitstable, Morris and Jessie stand leaning against each other on the platform. Waves send up a spume of spray as they crash against the breakers stretching out into the sea. The sun on the shingle beach makes the stones a sandy colour. A man walks his dog on the beach. Picking up a stick, he throws it for the black and white collie. Morris sits opposite Jessie in a bar. He holds a glass of champagne with both hands. He watches as Jessie swallows an oyster. Morris smiles.
I knew you would enjoy yourself.
The bar is big, full of character, and has a brick fireplace at its centre. The odd couple move outside.
I think we should go home now.
A little longer.
His arm round her shoulder, Morris reels unsteadily towards a sea break.
You're tired?
Oh, yes.
What should we do?
Carry on.
Yeah.
They saunter along the beach near the water's edge.
Will you take off my boots?
It's too cold, Morris.
I know. It was always bloody cold. Will you?
They're both wrapped up against the cold, Morris with his woolly hat and thick coat with its collar up, and Jessie in a sweater and a parka. She flicks her hair behind her ear, then bends down to remove his right boot and sock. She stuffs the sock into the boot, then stands up. She takes his right hand in her left, places her right arm around his back for support, and edges him towards the lapping waves. One boot on, one boot off. He stretches his right foot out as they move slowly forward. The water covers his bare foot. Jessie takes a tiny step back in her calf-length platform boots. They stand as the water continues to lap their feet. Jessie and Morris sit down on a wooden sea break. Her thighs and knees are bare and she wears no gloves. Jessie shivers.
Now? We can really talk.
Yeah.
Morris slowly lowers his head and leans it on her shoulder.
Morris? 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 No, Morris. Morris!
Morris, wake up. Wake up, Morris.
She leaves him sprawled against the sea break and runs up the beach.
Excuse me. Excuse me. I need to use your phone. I think he's dead. I need to use your phone, please. I need to use your phone. Please, if you can call an ambulance, I don't know what to do.
The foamy white waves of the murky brown sea roll onto the shingle beach covered in flotsam and crash against a sea break stretching out into the water. The waves roll inexorably on under the blue sky. A gathering of elderly men and women, the men wearing black ties and the women in black. Jessie makes her way through them. Jessie looks at all the faces surrounding her, then sees Valerie, who wears a black boater hat and a bright bow around her neck.
So it was you.
What?
Valerie holds out her hand.
I'm his wife. He was thinking about someone, it was you. Don't feel awkward. Ian told me.
Ian still won't talk to me. He thinks I did for Morris. The paddling and stuff.
Paddling was marvellous, the best way to go.
He really were a celebrity.
When you die, everyone wants to be your friend. What are you going to do?
I'm not going home. I can't go back now. And Ian won't have me in the house.
I've got somewhere you could stay for a bit.
Jessie tentatively makes her way up the stairs to Morris's first floor flat, its walls lined with framed photographs, a holdall slung over her shoulder. She stares at the photos as she walks slowly towards the bedroom. Jessie stands in the doorway, her hand resting on the frame. She sees across the room the oil painting of the sea and the beach.
Here we go. Where's your friend?
In the cabin cafe, Donald shakes his head, and Ian turns his paper to the waitress, who sees a photo of a younger Morris and a large obituary.
God, he was gorgeous.
Yes. He was gorgeous.
The waitress leaves. Donald gets up and walks away, leaving Ian alone at the table, the newspaper spread out in front of him. Ian stares at the paper without reading it. Donald is at the cafe door.
She wants to return these.
Donald holds Jessie's keys.
Say thank you.
Jessie's outside the cafe. She mutters to the bulky Donald, who turns to face Ian.
She wants to know if you're still angry with her. She says she's sorry.
Ian's bottom lip trembles.
Tell her. I'm not angry now. I just wasn't ready for someone like her.
A car sweeps past the cafe as Jessie stands outside the door. Inside, Donald looks across at Ian.
She says she'll come round tomorrow if you want. She'll cook you some fish.
Tell her. We can cook the fish. Together.
Do you sure don't want to come in? Oh, see that.
Donald closes the cafe door, the top half of it, which is glass. As he moves back towards the table, Jessie looks in, sees Ian, and waves to him. Framed in the glass, with the open and close sign blocking part of his view, Ian watches as Jessie in jeans, trainers and her bomber jacket sidles away across the cobbled street and out of his sight. Donald sits back down beside Ian and holds out his hand containing the keys. He drops them into Ian's hand.
How many columns did he get?
Ian hands the paper over to Donald, who starts to read. Donald folds up the paper and slaps it down on the table. Ian clutches the keys in his palm, and Donald sneaks a look at him. In the art class, the artists are ready. One reaches across for another crayon as Jessie enters, her bathrobe pulled tightly around her. She strides calmly towards a couch covered in red and blue cloths. Little girls double dutch on the concrete. As she passes the last of the artists who stand in front of a blank sheet of paper, Jessie removes her robe and, naked, steps onto the couch to lie with her back to the artist on the blue cloth on a white sheet. She adopts the reclining position of the Velázquez Venus Morris showed her in the National Gallery. ITFC audio description by James O'Hara was voiced by Aileen Downey. Directed by Roger Mitchell. Written by Hanif Qureshi. Produced by Kevin Loder. Peter O'Toole. Leslie Phillips. Jodie Whittaker. Venus. Richard Griffiths and Vanessa Redgrave. Executive Producers Tessa Ross, Scott Rudin. Executive Producers Miles Ketley, Charles Moore. Line Producer Rosa Romero. Director of Photography Harris Sambrolukos. Production Designer John Paul Kelly. Film Editor Nicholas Gaster. Costume Designer Natalie Ward. Hair and Makeup Designer Daniel Phillips. Songs by Corin Bailey Ray. Additional Music by Corin Bailey Ray and David Arnold. Casting by Fiona Weir. Cast in order of appearance: Morris, Peter O'Toole; Ian, Leslie Phillips; waitress, Beatrice Savaretti; doctor, Philip Fox; health clinic nurses, Lalita Chakrabarty, Carolina Giametta; Jessie, Jodie Whittaker. Royal Court actresses: Kelly Shirley, Ashley Madekwe, Oni Yohiara, Gillian, Catherine Bradshaw; hospital drama family: Joanna Kroll, Leah McKenna, Megwin Owen. Hospital Director, Sam Spruill. Hospital Runner, Tom Brook. Valerie, Vanessa Redgrave. Donald, Richard Griffiths. Art School Instructor, Harvey Verdi. Shop Assistant, Emma Buckley. Hospital Nurses, Marlene Sideway, Christine Bottomley. Surgeon, Daniel Sequeira. Period Film Protégé, Sam Kenyon. Period Film Lovers, Andrea Riseborough, Tom Mizem. Period Film Director, Paul Shahidi. Film Runner, Piers Harrison. Jessie's Boyfriend, Bronson Webb. Policeman, Tim Faraday. The Hollyoaks theme, composed and performed by Gordon Higgins and Steve Wright. Clarinet Quintet Allegro, composed by W.A. Mozart, performed by Joseph Ballot and Danubius Quartet. Avant-dernière pensée idylle, composed by Eric Satie, arranged by David Arnold and Dave Hartley. Performed by Rolf Wilson, Simon Baggs, Peter Lael, Jonathan Williams. Avant-dernière pensée idylle, composed by Eric Satie, performed by Dave Hartley. Veritable Prelude Flasque Pour un Chan, composed by Eric Satie, performed by Dave Hartley. Slavonic Dances Opus 72, No. 2 in E minor, Dumka, Allegretto Gracioso, composed by Antonin Dvorak. Arranged by David Arnold and Dave Hartley, performed by Rolf Wilson, Simon Baggs, Dave Hartley. Slavonic Dances Opus 72, No. 2 in E minor, Dumka, Allegretto Gracioso, arranged by Jeremy Birchall, composed by Antonin Dvorak, performed by Abraxas String Ensemble. Slavonic Dances Opus 72, No. 2 in E minor, Dumka, Allegretto Gracioso, performed by Berliner Philharmonica, Lauren Mazel. Lines quoted from the song I Should Be So Lucky, written by Stock Aitken Waterman. I'd Like To, composed by Corin Bailey Ray, Tommy Danvers, Paul Herman, performed by Corin Bailey Ray. Another Rainy Day, composed and performed by Corin Bailey Ray. Put Your Records On, composed by Corin Bailey Ray, John Beck, Steve Krizenthal, performed by Corin Bailey Ray. Shoe Pastry Heart, composed by Corin Bailey Ray, Titu Lassen, performed by Corin Bailey Ray. Like a Star, composed and performed by Corin Bailey Ray. Breathless, composed by Corin Bailey Ray and Mark Nelken, performed by Corin Bailey Ray. This motion picture is protected under the laws of the United States and other countries. Unauthorized duplication, distribution, or exhibition may result in civil liability and criminal prosecution. The story, all names, characters, and incidents portrayed in this production are fictitious. No identification with actual persons, places, buildings, and products is intended or should be inferred. Made through the UK Film Council's Premier Fund, the logo for UK Film Council Lottery funded. A free-range films production for Miramax, Film 4 and UK Film Council. Copyright 2006, Venus Pictures Limited, UK Film Council, Channel 4 Television Corporation, Miramax Films, Film 4.